Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The coronavirus pandemic has taken the lives of nearly 200,000 people around the country and upended the economy. Individuals and businesses are suffering, and governments are performing a balancing act in which they are trying to help citizens while also staying solvent in the face of declining revenues. How is Mecklenburg County doing? We're going to find out about that later in the hour. But first, we take a closer look at something else that has been impacted by the virus, the 2020 census. Originally scheduled to end on October 30th, it is now slated to wrap up on September 30th, a month earlier, at a time when participation in the census is already lower than the Census Bureau hoped. And a lot is riding on an accurate count. Everything from congressional representation to how voting districts are drawn to how many of the tax dollars that we send to the federal government actually come back to the states and to municipalities. All of that is dependent on the census, and the numbers the census reveals will be used for the next 10 years. So, in this first part of the program, we take a fresh look at the census, what it means, how you can participate if you haven't already done so, and how it may impact all of us. Mike Schneider is a journalist with the Associated Press, who is the AP's lead reporter for 2020 census coverage, and he joins us along with Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiOrio. Good morning. Welcome to you both. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. So, Mike, let me begin with you, because originally, as I said, the census was slated to end, by the end of July. Because of the pandemic, they moved it to the end of October. Now they've moved it to, it's like moving the Republican convention. They moved it to the to the end of this month. Why? Why is all this movement taking place? Remind us.
Well, it's been a constantly changing calendar because of the pandemic. For most people in the U.S., the census began in March, and that's when people all over the country got notices from the Census Bureau that they could start answering the questionnaire online by telephone or by mailing in their responses. A week later, the shutdowns began because of the pandemic, and the Census Bureau had to suspend some of its operations for about a month and a half. And during this time, the Census Bureau made the decision to end the count, which was supposed to end at the end of July, to the end of October. But that was partially contingent that legislation passed Congress that would allow the Census Bureau to turn in the numbers that are used to redraw congressional districts instead of the end of the year, push it back into the end of April. So the legislation passed the House. The Senate has failed to take action on it, and so the Census Bureau made the decision, instead of ending the count in October, to end it a month earlier in September, so that they would have enough time to process the numbers and make the calculations before the end of the year deadline, in which they have to turn in the numbers that are used for redrawing congressional districts.
So politics has reared its ugly head in this, too, because, as you mentioned, the original deadline for getting the count out was in April of 2021. If you move it to December 31st of this year, that means, win or lose, President Trump and the Republicans are in control of the census and the results of the census. Is that a fair assessment, or am I being too
right? There is a reason for that, and that is because at the end of July, President Trump issued an order instructing the Census Bureau to exclude people in the country illegally when it came to providing the numbers that are used for redrawing the congressional districts. This is currently being challenged in the courts. There are at least a half dozen lawsuits against this order. And, these lawsuits accuse the administration of doing this so that when the congressional districts are redrawn, they favor Republicans and whites than they would be if all the numbers were used.
Has this ever been done before? I mean, you just said something very alarming, at least to me, and that is that they want to use these numbers in order to make sure that they can favor Republicans when it comes time to draw districts, which seems to be something that's happened in this state particularly with surgical precision, according to one judge, and also to favor whites. Has this been done in the past by previous administrations? Because this happens once every 10 years.
Right. And it's funny that you talk about North Carolina, because the person who is considered the mastermind of this, Thomas Hofeller, was from North Carolina, and he played a big role, I guess, in your redistricting, your state's redistricting policies. But to answer your question, yes. Well, not by the administration. There have been past efforts to exclude people in the country illegally from the apportionment count. But usually it's been lawsuits brought by outside interest groups or lawmakers. This is really the first time that a presidential administration that is, oversees the nation's headcount has tried to do this.
So there are several things going on in the court, the cases that you just talked about with regard to counting those who are in here in the country with no documentation. Then Governor Roy Cooper and seven other governors have called on U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross to restore the deadline to October 31st. More than a half dozen cities and counties and other groups have sued the Trump administration, saying there is no justification for cutting the census short. And the census director says the earlier deadline for stopping is necessary to have the census complete by, as you said, December 31st, which is the deadline required by law, which I suppose could be moved if lawmakers would move it. Have governors or other entities involved in these lawsuits had any luck? Where is that process right now?
Well, it's a moving target. There are many lawsuits all across the country that are both challenging Trump's order and then also challenging the Census Bureau's decision to end the count early. There's actually the case that's furthest along is one in New York, and there's actually a hearing this week on that. And so we could be expecting some decisions in these cases over the next several weeks. And, depending on what these judges decide, and then if there's a guarantee that it's going to be appealed probably all the way to the Supreme Court, we probably won't really know when the census is going to end basically until the end of the month.
Dina, Mecklenburg County, is Mecklenburg County or any of the towns in Mecklenburg County or any of the surrounding counties that you know about involved in any of these requests of the government to restore the October 31st deadline?
Not that I'm aware of. We're coordinating all the census activities for our county, and we're not involved in any of those efforts, just really focused on trying to make the best of the time that we have left to get as many people counted as possible.
We're going to talk, Dina, about what this means to Mecklenburg County, the people participating in this, what's on the line, well, and for you and for people participating in this, but do you see an advantage to continuing the count through October 31st? Does it alarm you that it stops the end of this month now?
Well, I think it just gives, obviously it gives us less time to do the work that we wanted to do. COVID put a kind of a damper on our plans in terms of what we were going to do to try to get a complete count. So, not having that extra 30 days does really limit our ability to do all those activities that we wanted to do to try to get people counted. So you play the hand that you're dealt. We're going to continue to try to do what we can, but we would have loved to have the extra 30 days to continue those activities.
So the count, Mike, it would seem to me they've been counting as the forms have come in online and in some cases on paper from people out in the field canvassing. I suppose they're taking those numbers and putting them in their computers and counting them as they go. So the count that we're alarmed about is those who have not at all participated. Is that correct?
Right. So the stage when people were able to self-respond really started in March. And they've been able to do that either online, by mail, by telephone. And they will continue to be able to do that through the end of September or the end of October, depending on what the courts decide. But starting last month in August, starting in mid-July, Door knockers, people most associated with the Census Bureau, when they go to the households that haven't yet filled out their forms and knock on their doors and ask them the questions on the form so that they can fill them out. They started going out to places all over the country in July, and they started hitting basically the entire country at the beginning of August. So between the continued request for households to self-respond and between the door knockers, being able to get the answers to questions from households, they're hoping, the Census Bureau is hoping that will, cause the coverage of the number of households who have responded to rise over the next month.
One of the things that the door knockers are experiencing, I read yesterday, is the fact that some people aren't answering their doors because they don't want to open it up to strangers wearing a mask during COVID. And the other problem is that when they do open the doors and talk to them, they don't want to share any information with this person wearing a mask on the other side because they don't trust the government. Is the incidence of that up over previous censuses?
That's hard to measure quantitatively, but I know anecdotally, yes, from the census takers I've talked to, they've had the problem. And it's compounded by the fact that they are wearing masks as they do this. And, when you're trying to get answers from people, it's a little bit of a sales job. You try and win them over and try and persuade them to give you the answers to the questionnaire. And they say that having to wear a mask and not being able to show half your face makes that job that mm-hmm. much more difficult. Plus, there are, suspicions from people about the administration's intent, given the efforts over the past 2 years. The failed efforts over the past 2 years to add a citizenship question to the census form. And then just general suspicion of government that has grown, say, over the past decade or so.
Yeah, you report that Thomas Lewis, a Johns Hopkins biostatistician who was the Census Bureau's chief scientist from 2013 to 2015, says the shortened schedule is going to create a cascading chain of consequences. What specifically is he predicting?
So when the count out in the field ends, that there's a whole lot of work that the Census Bureau needs to do between when the count ends and when they turn in their numbers. And that includes removing duplicate responses, verifying information, trying to fill in gaps in information, either using administrative records or other resources. So it takes, and this is what they call the processing the data, and the processing takes time. And in fact, under the original change schedule, when the census was going to end in October, and then the Census Bureau wasn't going to turn in the apportionment numbers until April, that was 6 months that they had to do that processing. And now with the current schedule, with it ending in September and turning in the numbers at the end of December, that's almost being cut in half.
Are they doing anything between now and the end of September to speed things up or to try to double up on their efforts to go door to door? Are they doing anything like that in 30 seconds or less?
Yeah, I mean, they are trying to get as many door knockers out there as possible. They've had trouble with hiring, though, because of the pandemic. A lot of people go through training and then they just don't show up for work. And so the Census Bureau says they're still hiring, even though there's less than a month until the count ends. And so they're hoping to get people out to knock on the doors.
Mike Schneider is a correspondent for the Associated Press and their lead reporter on the census. He's here along with Dina DiOrio, Mecklenburg County Manager, and we'll talk about the impact on Mecklenburg when we come back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fifth Third Bank, dedicated to the financial empowerment of the community by investing time, resources, and people in the Charlotte area and throughout the state. More at 53.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the census. They're a little behind in taking the census, and the deadline for cutting off the census has been moved up to the end of this month. Today is September 1st. It will end on September 30th. Mike Schneider is the lead reporter on the census for the Associated Press. He joins us from Orlando. but not Disney World. And Dina DiOrio is with us, who is joining us from her plush estate somewhere in the bowels of Mecklenburg County. Let's talk about how this is affecting Mecklenburg County, because counties across the country, municipalities across the country, Dina, as everybody should know, are impacted. Every citizen is impacted because your voting representation is impacted by this census. According to NPR, roughly 4 out of 10 households nationwide are yet to be counted. That means only 60% of people have been counted. What's the number in Mecklenburg County? Do you know?
As of yesterday, we were at 65.5% counted in the county. And so we do have some work to do. In 2010, we were a little over 67%. So we're getting close. But our goal for this census for 2020 was always to beat the numbers that we got in 2010. So, you know, just getting to where we were in 2010 is not good enough for us. We want to exceed that number. We want every person in Mecklenburg County to be counted.
We're doing better than the national average because we're up 5% over the national average, but I'm told that there are certain neighborhoods that are not doing so well. The top three neighborhoods with less than 40% response are Harris, Houston, I don't even know where that is, Hidden Valley, and College Downs. Do those three neighborhoods have something in common?
Well, generally, you know, low income neighborhoods, African-American neighborhoods, neighborhoods with non-English speaking residents are usually undercounted. And these three neighborhoods would be representative of those characteristics. And so we always knew that we would have neighborhoods like that. And we're really trying to work to target messaging and information to those neighborhoods to see if we can't get those numbers up.
The census is a federal endeavor. How do you know these numbers? Do they let you in on how they're doing periodically through the process?
The Census Bureau has done a tremendous job of putting response rates online, and they're updated daily. So we get, you know, daily information by census tract to know exactly where we are. And that's been very helpful as we, you know, continue to find ways and look for ways to be able to target our efforts to get information out, trying to leverage opportunities that currently exist when we're in the middle of a pandemic.
When you look at the towns around throughout Mecklenburg County that surround Charlotte, the response rates are better than they are in Charlotte. I'm fascinated by this. Matthews has had a 76% response rate, Huntersville 73.8, Cornelius 71.6, Davidson, 71%, Mint Hill, 68%, Charlotte, 62.7%, Pineville, 58.5%. Do you have any clue as to why those numbers, I know they're in declining order, but why those numbers are the way they are in these surrounding areas? Huntersville and Davidson are very close together, and yet there's a big discrepancy there.
Well, I think what you need to do is look at those numbers in comparison to, let's say, Charlotte. So, you know, you have more of those neighborhoods in Charlotte that are typically undercounted or underrepresented than you would, say, in the northern part of the county. So having numbers that are in the 70s right now, I think is fantastic because we still have time to be able to get those numbers even higher. But when you're in the 60s or you're in the 50s, it just takes a lot more time and a lot more effort to get those numbers where we want them to be. I'm really pleased with the numbers that we're seeing in the towns, except for Pineville, in the surrounding towns within the county.
You are the chair of the Mecklenburg County Complete Count Committee. I went online yesterday. Everybody in Charlotte is on that committee. I mean, it's astounding. It's an enormous committee. What have you been doing to facilitate this count, and how successful have you been?
Well, we do have a large committee, and it is representative of various facets of our community. We have education, we have business, we have faith community representation, we have healthcare, because we want to make sure that we get as much coverage as we can. And so what our committee has done is provided us opportunities to be able to get the word out. We have a series of subcommittees that are working on education, community-based organizations. We have a public relations committee that have been working really for well over a year and a half to define and come up with strategies to be able to target those places where we need to get people counted. I think we've been very successful. We've been able to hold together throughout the pandemic and really find new ways to be able to get our messaging out. So because we can't do the traditional activities that we had planned, we're doing things a little bit differently now. So we are distributing census materials whenever we do a mass distribution event, COVID-19 testing sites, we have census material there, mobile testing sites, we hand out census material there. When we have immunization clinics at the health department, we are distributing census material. We are doing census parades where we're going through these neighborhoods that don't have the response rates that we want. And raise awareness about the census. We'll be doing, as of today, we'll be sending out door hangers to those census tracts and those zip codes that don't have the response rates that we want. Just really trying to take advantage of every opportunity and every single day that we have left in order to get our counts up.
I don't know why I held onto this piece of paper, but I did. It's from the Census Bureau, and it's dated March 16th, and it's a letter to me, Mike, that says, "Dear resident, you should have received instructions for completing your 2020 census. I did it online. It took about 5 minutes, and I'm old enough to have participated in several censuses, if that's the right word, maybe censi, in the past, which were considerably longer than the one I filled out this time. Literally, it took me less than 5 minutes to do it online. But I guess they were assuming that I had online access. Had I not had online access, would I have gotten a census form in the mail?
Yes, you would have.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, you would have. They had about, I want to say, well, initially the plan was to have 5 mailings. I think they've had something like 6 or 7 mailings. And if you hadn't filled out your form, I believe in by the fourth mailing, third or fourth mailing, you got a census form in the mail. And then they added on some mailings to people who haven't yet responded, and they did include a paper census form in those mailings.
So what seems to be the major problem? I mean, if you don't have internet access, then filling it out online is impossible unless you go to a library, which I think are closed right now. So you have to get the paper census, and it takes no longer to fill it out on paper than it does to fill it out online. And I'm assuming that the paper came with a self-addressed prepaid envelope. What seems to be the roadblock?
Well, I think many things. I mean, it's like anything. If you don't have a gun to your head, you know, you're not going to do it. People talk about, I know early in the process, if they got either their notification or their form, you know, they put it on their pile of bills and then forget about it for a little bit because it's not a pressing deadline. And they don't realize, you know, that this is about power and money and that it's going to determine their political representation and how much in federal funding they get. So, you know, either they just don't realize the importance of what the census is, or like everything in life, it gets put on a pile and you forget about it until someone reminds you. So
now, people may not know this, but participation in the census is mandatory, but there is no penalty, I suppose, for not participating.
Yes. It is mandatory. I don't think there's been a prosecution for lack of participation in, I want to say, 60, 70 years. So the likelihood of you being prosecuted for not participating is very close to zero.
Let's talk about what this does, because it's mandatory because they want to get an accurate count of the number of people in the country. And that's what the Constitution says. It doesn't say citizens. It says the number of people living in whatever area you're in the country, which is why I think the court said no to putting a citizenship question on the census, and also why people who are here undocumented get counted, because they are using resources of cities and towns and counties. So what does this mean to a Mecklenburg County to get an accurate count? What would the difference, Dina, between a 65% participation rate and a 100% participation rate mean to Mecklenburg County and to North Carolina?
Well, I mean, you mentioned political representation and voting districts, and that's a big part of it. But I think for us here on the ground, it's really about how federal funding gets distributed throughout the state. And we know that, you know, at last count, it was 4 million people in the state that had not been counted, which translates into $7.4 billion a year in federal funding that would be lost to the state of North Carolina. So We know how important it is to make sure we get an accurate count to make sure that those funds flow here. And the other thing I'll mention, and this is a real life example, is, you know, these COVID dollars that from the CARES Act that got distributed throughout the country were based on population. And so, again, you know, if we did not have an accurate count, that would have been less COVID dollars that would have come here that would have allowed us to help respond to the needs in our county. And so I think people don't really realize how important that data is.
And we really don't have
dollars coming here.
We really don't have an accurate count because the distribution of those funds was based on population counts from 10 years ago. This thing lasts for 10 years. And North Carolina, and particularly Mecklenburg County, are one of the fastest growing areas in the country. People are coming here like a tsunami. So it's more important even for us to have this accurate count, correct?
And we always knew that the challenge would also be in Mecklenburg County, that we have a much more culturally diverse population now than we did in 2010. And getting folks to participate that may be undocumented or may not be English speakers, we knew we were going to have to do much more work in those areas to get those folks to be counted.
Our colleague Katie Peralta with the Charlotte Agenda wrote that if you care about getting grocery stores in your neighborhood, having access to public transit, seeing federal funding go to your schools, you should fill out the census survey. Atrium Health uses census data to decide where these emergency urgent care facilities that they operate should be located. This is not just for government. Businesses use this information everywhere in the country. What other kinds of impacts might we be unaware of, Mike, that businesses use this information to do?
Oh, I mean, as you kind of pointed out, businesses use the information to decide where they should expand, where they should put new facilities, where they should put distribution centers. And then on the public sector, you know, this also help the money is used to decide which areas get highway funding, how much money schools get, and also lunch programs. Medical funding. So a lot is at stake.
So over the next 30 days, if you have not participated in the census and you don't have this piece of paper that tells you how to do this online, what can you do to participate on your own?
Well, if you're not online or if you don't have a piece of paper.
Yeah, because this has my2020census.gov. That's a response location, but also you have a census ID. Maybe if you don't have this piece of paper, you don't have your ID.
Right, exactly. Well, if you have access to the internet, you can still fill out the census without your census ID. You just input your address, and the Census Bureau will be able to figure out, that is you. And that's one of the things they do in the processing state. Try and get a paper form and fill it out. They have these mobile questionnaire units that are placed in different areas, and you can get a paper form there. So,
Mike Schneider is the lead reporter on the census for the Associated Press. Mike, thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.